relationships, religion, reality. This is Glenn Klein Online.
In store, love is the drug, and I need to score. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl, where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of.
Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is hump day, Wednesday, November 28th, 2012. The only last Wednesday of November 2012 in the history of humanity. And now, ladies and gentlemen, after a two-week live hiatus, let us go to Chris Harrington's reality.
As real as it is.
Love the Tiffany bass. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, each week on The Good News on Glenn Klein, we welcome in the intermediator from Nacogdoches, Texas. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Please say hello online to Mr. Chris Harrington.
All right.
What's up, buddy?
Can't live without him. How did they make it so far?
It's a euphemism, my friend.
Oh, well, I'm too old for that.
So, how's your couple of weeks been?
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I need a driver's license for a bicycle. That's how bad it is. I spilled on my bike, and I've done some damage to my shoulder. Hopefully, it's not going to be anything too drastic, but I'm dragging around.
Well, this most recent mishap puts you in jeopardy of missing 12-12-12.
It does, but I'm working. I'm working on it diligently.
All right. What are you doing?
Well, I'm going to a massage therapist. I went today to a specialist in the field of orthopedic surgery. I am going to go for an MRI. I had an X-ray. I'm going to massage therapy again tomorrow morning, and I'm doing reflexology.
I think you're gonna be in better shape when you have to depart from Nacogdoches to come over to the west side of Florida.
Yeah.
Than you were in before the bike accident. That's what I'm saying.
I hear that.
Just typing.
We'll just see.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are welcoming your calls tonight because we are live. We circumvented both the ravages of the monster storm Sandy. As well as that was 2 weeks ago, as well as the Thanksgiving holiday, and we're coming to you live. So Sean O'Halloran is here. Are you plugged in? Say hello to the beautiful human, Sean.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for?
Wow. Never do that again. 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. Sean waiting to sing to you at 1-800-436-3260. Toll free all over North America. If you're listening outside North America, you can call as well at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. You got a full moon going in Nacogdoches tonight?
It is. It's humongous.
That is what she said.
Yeah, it's just hanging in the sky.
And, of course, we
do. I know that's what she said, too. But it is. It's really bright.
That is the reality of very clear skies. I think not only with the full moon tonight, but I think it is a lunar eclipse, if I'm not mistaken.
A lunar eclipse?
Did you hear about that?
What, tonight?
I think pretty quick here.
Well, if we have a full moon tonight, it won't be eclipsing tonight, will it?
Well, theoretically, it could. If the sun moves in front of it.
Oh yeah, well I mean.
All right, but, Sean, can you get on that? See when the Sean's on it. See when the lunar eclipse is, buddy.
Okay.
I think it might. I saw something on. See, if you see something on Facebook, you know it's true.
Absolutely.
That's just what I'm saying.
That's why I try to stay away from that place.
No, I see what you're stepping in. Yeah. Over a billion people now on Facebook. It would be the third largest nation on the planet if it was a country.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I saw the other day somebody was sending a thing around that said they're going to mess with Facebook, and so what you need to do is contact 15 people and get them all involved. And I thought, okay, if you get a billion people or whatever all online at the same time, all of them shifting information to 15 other people, that'll crash the system. So that probably was not something that came from Facebook.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But we love the Facebook. It's why, frankly, or it is the vehicle of which caused 12-12-12 to happen. Going to be gathering with many wonderful, beautiful humans here in the Tampa Bay region, including the maestro, Greg Amberge. He's coming down from Cincinnati for the party for Kimber and myself, and hopefully you will be coming and officially officiating.
I would love to do that. I'm still hoping to make that happen.
All right, so here we got a full moon, and you being the student of the human condition, I've seen research done that says that people are not actually affected by the full moon and things like emergency room visits or police involvement in their lives statistically. But what does your experience and your observation say about the effect of the full moon on the human being?
Well, I think that pretty much you could say that people are pretty crazy all the time, and they don't need much help. It may be that by the light of the moon, you're more likely to go out and do something, but in my mind, that would be more likely to get caught because now people can see you and you can't run out of the light.
Right.
So I'm not exactly sure what the thinking is behind the storyline, but it doesn't seem to hold true to me that there's more or less craziness during the full moon. I think it's just as you said, a euphemism. I think it's an expression that people use to say there's more craziness than usual, but they probably will do that any time because they'll say or they'll ask, is it a full moon tonight or what? Because even though there's not a full moon, people are still going buck wild crazy.
And people are just looking for any kind of excuse.
Yeah. There must be a reason for this. They're trying to make some cogent analysis occur concerning why people are acting out.
It's
a fairly simple thing, anyway.
One of the cool things to know, and why it made some logical sense to me before I saw the statistics on it, they actually do have statistics on this stuff. And we do know that like things like seasonal depression is definitely a very real thing. We've actually talked about it on this radio show.
That's right.
However, knowing that the Earth is about 70% water, and we can see the high tide come in and the waters of the Earth be affected by the lunar cycle, knowing that human beings, having come from the Earth, are also 70% water, it would make sense that the water, the moisture that is in each individual, has at least some effect, especially those that have more or less liquid in them than some people. It would make sense that it would have some effect, the lunar cycle, on our little planets as we walk around.
I'm
trying to see if I can tie that together.
It's not so just water.
Causing the riptide or
the high tide, yes.
The high tide. Then it must be that people are crazier because of the gravity. of the moon.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's water. It's just a gravitational pull, and that's what the effect that it has on water. It has other effects on anything else.
Sure.
It has.
And the next lunar eclipse is, I don't know what time zone, but several hours ago.
Oh, so it is right now.
Well, it was right now several hours ago.
Really?
About.
So they had one today?
Yeah, it was at 1400, 14 something, but I don't know what time zone.
And there you have it. And where was that visible?
Hold on, I'll tell you in 2 seconds.
Sean Earl Halloran reporting from the Glenn Klein Online Studios.
He's like the science guy.
Europe, East Africa, Asia, Australia, Pacific, North America.
Tinahaw, Timpson, Bobo, and Blair. Okay, I like it.
All right, so at 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, it must have been. Well, it wouldn't have been so visible, but it might have been felt, though.
So it's a partial eclipse, huh?
It is a penumbral eclipse, whatever that is. I don't know what that means.
Penumbral.
It's not like a total eclipse.
The perimeter of it?
It's, I really don't know.
All right, well, Sean, you have your next assignment, penumbral.
Then there you go.
Get on it.
Confused with Pernambuco, which is a wood that they use to make bows for cellos and violins.
Well, maybe there is an association between the two.
Okay, it could be.
We're going to find out here momentarily, you guys. This is called a radio tease. Stay tuned for the next Sean O'Halloran Reports right here. Good news on Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you along for the ride. The Thanksgiving and this time of the year, forget about full moons, although that might have a negligible effect.
Right.
We know that the overconsumption of beverages and sweets and food and just overconsumption definitely has an effect on the human condition and the human spirit.
And the waistline.
Exactly, which is all tied together.
Yeah.
The tradition of going crazy in this last month of the year, most people don't realize, Chris, that it goes... I mean, this is old school. I mean, this is centuries and centuries old.
Sure.
Where the ruling class allowed for 1 month of the peasantry to go crazy. They could put everything on credit. And then, of course, they spent the rest of the year paying it back.
Sure.
And the revelry that surrounds from, pretty much now in our society, from Halloween through New Year's, certainly causes people to overconsume... both in things that they put into their body as well as what they expend in finances and in time spent. And it's very interesting that the tradition, far from being quote-unquote Christian, continues to this day.
Sure. Well, you got several things. Mardi Gras in there, Halloween's in there, Thanksgiving's in there.
Well, Mardi Gras is an extension, really, of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you got also Oktoberfest, Festivus.
And Festivus and St. Patrick's Day, and the 4th of July.
It's around the clock thing. I went to a city down in Mexico where they had 156 holidays. And every time they had a holiday, they would haul this cannon through the street, and they would blast it out. So you could always tell when there was a holiday, which was almost... That's like 50% of the days.
We now have the definition of the word that I cannot remember what the word was, but Sean has it.
It's a penumbral, yeah. And when the sun casts a shadow, when the earth casts a shadow from the sun, there's a very narrow part, and it gets narrower as you go further away from the earth of total darkness that, there's no light from the sun, but then spreading out from there, you're blocking most of the sun, but some of the sun around the corner is coming through. So there is some light, but most of it's being blocked by the earth. And the total dark spot is called the umbra, and the mostly dark area is called the penumbra. And so it was an eclipse in the penumbra.
Wow.
Partial eclipse.
And that sounds like they could have gotten the term for that wood that way, too. With darkness.
Why not?
Darkness going to lighter wood.
Yeah.
If you will.
I'm going for it.
Dude.
Until I know better, why not?
We're connecting all the dots here tonight on the good news on Glenn Klein Online. All right, so now that we got the holidays all straightened out, what would you recommend? What would you recommend to the people that every year at this time, the stress level of human beings, at least in Western in North America,
expectations are out the wazoo.
So how do you not just survive the holiday season and full moons? And
well, I'll tell you one of the things that we do. This is going to sound very. I don't know what it's going to sound like, but we've given up on the whole thing about like Christmas gifts and stuff like that. We don't do that anymore.
Do you
have so much stuff, we don't need anything more.
But do you get together on December 25th and you have a big old
sometimes
turkey?
We're all real busy and everybody's doing their thing, and we try to, and we phone call. But even though everybody has, you know, you got layers and layers of kids and everything's going on. But we meet during the year, and we talk all the time, and we're always, you know, so it's not like we need an extra special dispensation to get together. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
it's
I do.
It's something that happens enough. I got some members of my family, we hardly ever get together, and so that it wouldn't matter if we had, you know, whatever it was. But as far as, like, the mainstay, we get together all the time. So nothing extra special occurs. So we don't go through that stress period. What are you going to do? I don't know. What are you going to do? I'm going to do this. Okay, see ya.
What are you going to buy? What do you need?
Yeah, I hear people talking about their Christmas shopping, and this one woman today, she said, I only have one gift bought so far, and I have so many more to go. And I'm thinking, dude, stop.
Stop.
Just say no.
Okay, Nancy Reagan.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, and this is a relatively new phenomenon. I would say this is only maybe a couple decades, maybe a quarter century old, because I can't remember this when I was a younger adult or even a kid. People, and you hear this all the time, Chris, people like to ask, are you ready for Christmas?
Right.
And I think, what
like
a...
Like you could be.
Yeah, like, what a question.
Yeah.
Are you ready for the holidays?
It's almost like, are you ready for Armageddon?
Are you ready for the end of the world?
Yeah. It's true. And people get into, like, a shark-feeding frenzy about, you know, I'm sure you saw photographs or movies, clips of people shopping during the holidays.
Dude, I lived
and,
it. I lived
they
it.
They went completely
oh my God.
Crazy.
My son runs a store in one of the, in the big local mall here in Brandon, Florida. And the one day on Black Friday at midnight, they can employ family, and he needed extra help. So I went in there. I was a trooper. And his store is right at the entrance by the food court of this large mall, right?
Oh, wow.
Dude, when they opened that door, it was like the running of the bulls in Spain. I could not believe people that have been in this mall probably hundreds of times sprinting to nowhere. Who knows where they were going? Were they going to the Apple store? Were they going to Victoria's Secret? I'll tell you this. He was open from midnight until 10 o'clock the next morning, or the 10 o'clock the next night.
Yeah.
And he busted what his sales goals were. And
wow.
He said the reason was is because they opened at midnight versus at 6 o'clock in the morning, which they had been doing. So, and dude, you cannot, it was like a line for the Rolling Stones concert.
Yeah.
They were wrapped around the mall.
See, I can't understand it. You know, supposedly, we just went through this major lesson, you know, make sure you have enough money to back you up. And we're, you know, just going at it like there's no tomorrow. And, of course, a lot of people believe there isn't going to be any tomorrow, so why not just spend it today? I'm not thinking, well, you can do all that stuff. You can sit in your garage while you're gone, but I got so much stuff now, it's unbelievable. As they say, I have an embarrassment of riches.
Somebody asked Kimber and me the other day what we needed for 12-12-12 for our celebration.
Yeah.
And I said, we have everything and nothing.
Yeah.
They said, where are you registered? I said, with the U.S. Treasury Department.
It's really good.
That's
great.
This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Chris Harrington's Reality. Sean O'Halloran in the studio taking your calls tonight at 1-800-436-3260. That's the toll-free number, or direct from all over the planet, 813-425-5773. We posted tonight Chris's poem that you published today. why do you laugh, my friend? That was a good one.
I just do. It's part of my nature.
Just to laugh freely.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
What were you? You guys just go to the Facebook page, the Good News on Glenn Klein Online webcast. You go to Chris's webpage at Chris Harrington on Facebook, not the webpage, but the wall, if you want to read the poem. But what was your general point of?
Well, yeah, I posted, I think, 9 poems today, so you have to refresh my memory. Which one was it?
It was about the circle.
Oh, yeah, story circle. Well, the thing
story
is that I have a sense that you can interpret people's lives by looking at dramatic theory. If you see people's story unfolding, you can see generally that it follows a pretty human script. Storylines are famous for having a certain flow to them. If it's a movie, it has a certain kind of flow. It's a play, it has a certain kind of flow. If it's a short story, a certain kind of flow. And so most things in that genre will have that certain kind of flow. It's like the meta script of it is going to be pretty much the same all throughout. And you can see people's lives that same way. They start out with this sense of I'm a character and I know so much, and they run into a little bit of trouble, and the next thing you know, they're trying to work that out. But they usually use the same old questions and answers routines, you know, that they've always used. And if it's something new, then it doesn't work, and they're like really bumfuzzled, don't know how to handle that. So they've got to reinvent themselves and come at it from a different direction and learn something. And then they learn their lesson after they've gone through that series of phenomena that we call the working out the action of the play. And then you finally come to the theme, and this is what you learned, and then you speak that and you communicate it to your audience, which is really yourself, and then you start the whole process all over again, thinking that you have whipped everything and you now know it all. And that's what gets you in trouble, because now you're going to run into brand new stuff and you start the process all over again. So it's a cycle of how people communicate with themselves and learn to speak their own inner truth.
Really what you're saying is that the cycle is really cyclical or circular.
It is.
Unfortunately, as opposed to being a stepping stone.
Yeah, it's true. There's a famous piece by T.S. Eliot. He says that what happens is we come back to the beginning, but we know it for the first time. You know, we circle back around throughout our lives, and after everything, you know, I laugh all the time. I live 6 miles from where my father had his first office, and when he was a 19-year-old chiropractor and had his first office just 6 miles from me right now. So for all my world travels, I haven't gone very far.
Are you going to go to a chiropractor for your shoulder?
Yeah, that's my next step, but I have to go to the MRI first and make sure that I don't have something that might get wrenched, because chiropractic is a little bit more, it's more invasive, I'd say, than a massage therapist.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
I know chiropractic very well. My father was a DC, but also I had 4 or 5 other people in my family, and I've been to, I don't know, probably 50 or so chiropractors in my life, so I think I know quite a bit about it.
What is your position on chiropractic?
It has a use. It's definitely a practice that when people know their biomechanics and they understand subluxation and movement of vertebra and bones in the body, they can absolutely do a tremendous amount of good. There are, like in any field, people who don't really know and they think it can do everything and it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they don't really have a clue, and they misuse it or abuse it, and they give the field a bad name. But I think there are many, many, many very good chiropractors out there who are extremely well-trained and do a very good job.
It's like anything else, isn't it?
Just like anything else, that's right. So you have to shop around and find.
You
got to
shop around for a good chiropractor, ladies and gentlemen. You got to shop around for a good intermediator.
That's right.
fortunately, we have the best, and as far as we know, the only intermediator online with us tonight. I have been going to a chiropractor for probably 30 years, or not a but to chiropractic, and with great results. I mean, it's I think it can be very, very effective, but all kidding aside, do your due diligence, beautiful humans.
Absolutely.
But I cannot recommend, there's all kinds of reasons to take care of your skeletal system. And one of the things that you mentioned to me before we went online while we were testing, Chris, was that your doctor, not a doctor of alternative medicine, but is he a neurologist or the guy you went to?
The one I went to today, he's an orthopedic surgeon.
Okay.
And he's already done two procedures on me. I had a crushed my hand in a steel door, and he fixed it. And I had my right leg scoped, and it looked like lace. But he did my what do you call that under your knee? I forget what it's called right now. But anyway, it looked like lace cheese. It was really funny.
Arthroscopic surgery.
Yeah, and he did a great job, and I felt like it was wonderful.
But what he said to you was, because you told him of what you're doing with your diet and your exercise and your massage therapy.
Right.
And here's a guy who's going outside the box of his own profession, saying there are other alternatives besides just getting surgery done.
Oh, he was in for everything I was into. He was saying I was right on, you know, that he would have told me to do those things if I hadn't already been doing them, you know, nutritionally as well as all the different resources I'm looking at. And his only concern was that, you know, if we don't look at the MRI and really check it out, there's a possibility I might miss something. And he said, you know, it's worth a grand to take a look. So take a look.
When's that going to happen, your MRI?
Friday morning.
Yeah. All right. So our best wishes and fervent lack of prayer.
Yeah, just a picture.
We'll be with you. Yeah, take a picture. Right. Smile.
Miles, right.
You're on Candid Camera.
So you want to get some work done?
I do, and I know you want to get to that. And
you bet.
We appreciate all your sharing. We're going to take our break right now.
All right.
And then we'll come back, and we're going to dive in. Because I know Chris has got some very serious stuff. I don't know if it's serious, but it's fresh. It's new.
Fresh. Let's see.
Yeah. So we're going to get to that while we return right here on Chris Harrington's Reality on the Good News on Glenn Kline Online.
I caught you knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby, can I have some more? Ooh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man. Gone. Damage done.
The good news on Glenn Kline Online is brought to you in part by the Guru of Gratitude.com. The Guru of Gratitude.com. Make money being nice.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone. But every junkie's like a setting sun.
The Guru of Gratitude.com. Toll free, 888-493-7482. 888-493-7482. That's Neil Young, The Needle and the Damage Done. By special request tonight by the medicine man, Pep Washburn, in beautiful Wisconsin. Actually, he did not request that song, amazingly. Or maybe he forgot that he listened to the program from 2 weeks ago. He specifically requested the song Heart of Gold from the album Harvest by Neil Young. And Sean was like, I downloaded this already. And I said, all right, we'll go to a next one, another great tune.
Cool.
That's not as uplifting as the Heart of Gold one, but I find, I don't know, I find great umbrage and great, not umbrage, what's the word? Just great peace with that song for some reason. Maybe it's because Neil Young's such a great artist.
He's wonderful. I love his voice.
No doubt. So that's for you, Pepe. Hope you enjoyed it. And you guys, the guruofgratitude.com, actually, our little advertising campaign got a response yesterday. And so I was excited about that. You guys just go to guruofgratitude.com or call me at 888-493-7482, and I'll give you all the info. It's pretty cool stuff, I must say. All right, Christopher, you informed me that you've got some new territory to cover. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I'm a little nervous, as always. Take it away.
Well, this is a good step because we've reached a place where we need to add some incentives. And I like incentives.
No doubt. I think that incentives, I know that incentives really not only enhance the experience, but motivate the participant.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, there's some really kind of cool stuff. Maybe we'll have a chance to get into it as we proceed on the webcast. But there's some pretty cool stuff that's been happening for our major goal here of growing up, or my major goal of growing up. And,
cool.
And, being able to be financially more stable and independent. But
I love that.
Continue.
There's nothing like progress. Effective living.
I like the effective living.
Very good. Well, we were talking earlier today, and of course we've been talking on and off during in the in-between times, about, you know, things that we could do and how we could be more effective in our daily lives and how we could have more energy to do the things we need to do. And, of course, we've made lists and lists and lists about things that we need to do. And you get to some of them and some of them you don't get to. And now I think that we've gotten a list now that's pretty workable. And at a certain point you come to what they call your frustration level. That is, there's only so much you can do in a day. So if you make a list that's too heavy duty, then you get to a point where you go, you know what, I'm not getting all those things today. I just don't have time, or I bit off more than I could chew. There are all kinds of little phrases that we use to cover that territory, but it really gets down to the hill is just a little bit too steep for us. And so we need a little incentive to push ahead and build some character, some muscles. And so what you can do, we've talked about this briefly in the past, but I want to be a little bit more straightforward about it, and that is about the idea of rewards. But first I want to separate that from the concept of entitlement. Entitlement is where you think that you're owed something. Somebody, somewhere, owes you. You know, I did this and therefore you did that. Now, part of how I view maybe the standard message of religion sometimes is that, you know, if I like, for example, if I accept Christ, then he has to redeem me. There's something there that smacks of entitlement.
It's called a quid pro quo.
Yeah, and there's something there that's a little bit, I'm not quite sure, I'm a little shaky of it. Maybe other people are more accepting of that, maybe that works for them, but for me, my having any kind of onus, you know, my having it up on God just because I do something, that doesn't guarantee anything to me. I mean, this is God we're talking about. He's, you know, he's the boss. So if I did X, Y, and Z, wouldn't matter what it was. He's still going to do whatever he does. So from my position, it seems more secure to say he's already done X, Y, and Z. Like, say, for example, I believe he's already redeemed me, and therefore, in having redeemed me, I can then respond to that. I've got something to go on. But for me to try to start the ball rolling like he's waiting for me to do something seems, I don't know, there's just something about that. So I want to work on that consciousness for a second and say that when I'm looking at what other people are doing, they're free in the moment to walk out the door and never shake my hand again. That's a freedom that they have. I don't own them. They're not my slaves. I don't have any power over them. You know, my wife and I have talked about this. If I come home and she's packed all her stuff up and she's gone to the great beyond, or she's out, you know, shopping for the rest of her life or whatever, that's her choice. She has that power to do that. She's a fully adult human being with authority over herself. That she's here every day is a wonderful thing, but and I don't want to take that for granted. At the same time, I don't have any power over that. And I think that my having a sense of entitlement would make me look more like I think she's a possession of mine. Like, you better be there or what? You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, the whole concept of, we were talking about this, I'll phrase it like this, is there sex after marriage? You know, that it's a really big question, but I think that when you're dating, when you're getting together, when you first get married, there's this sense of really just throwing yourself into it and wanting to be as open as you possibly can. And then later on, when you find that there are edges and that some things are more difficult and you get your feelings hurt and you're not listened to as much, you tend to pull back. So whereas before, when you weren't living together, let's say, for example, you didn't know all the other person's behaviors, before, it was a wide-open field, nothing to bog you down. But once you get to see the other person in operation, for example, watching them eat, some people just, the thought of watching their mate eat just makes them freak out, you know.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's a thing. Smacking is a really big thing. I work with a lot of people about the behaviors of their mates, and smacking is like a really big thing. Why do you smack? Well, why do you care? Well, it's wrong. Well, that says you. And you get that kind of stuff. You know, he says...
All right, hold on for a second.
Yeah.
How perfect is that example of something that really doesn't make a difference?
It really doesn't.
Right.
But
so if you extrapolate...
irritating.
Right, but if you extrapolate all the potential irritating things
yeah.
that there are in a relationship that mean
right.
absolutely nothing...
Right.
Is it possible for people to mature to the point in a relationship like that, in a intimate relationship, where that stuff... See, I just edited myself.
Well,
that stuff just doesn't really make a difference anymore.
It really... Actually, it shouldn't. It really shouldn't matter. I mean, all of us, in some way or another, we're our own freak. And our mates know it. It's no lie. And that we have some sort of... you know, moral retribution towards our mate because they do something that we don't like is usually, in fact, more a reflection of our disliking something about ourselves that they're actually pointing out, and we don't want them to do it. So it's a very messy business to get in the middle of all that. Talk about shoulder surgery. It's really very messy, but it really gets down to something as simple as, what does it really matter? Really, ultimately. And I'll tell you, where it really comes out is if the other person dies, then all of a sudden that smacking would be a comfort.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Things that were so aggravating when they're
gone. Yeah, I aggravated the bejesus out of me, but you know what? I'd give anything to have that, just one more meal of that smacking.
That's one perspective on it, which is phenomenal,
yeah.
of course. How about this? That when people are less than patient with other people's idiosyncrasies like smacking,
sure.
That it's really because they're most aggravated about their own idiosyncrasies that they're
aware. It's true.
That
yeah.
they're aware
There's
of.
There's a lot
both
of self-hatred projected
yeah.
in the world.
How much do you think the relational issues that we have, whether it be personally or all the way up to internationally, is because of self-hatred or self-loathing?
Well, a lot. I think that what it gets down to in a lot of cases is that we are, acting out of shame. We shame ourselves. And in reality, there's no reason to be ashamed because God's not holding anything we do against us. God's not angry with us. We're angry at ourselves because we don't meet whatever standard that we've created for ourselves or whichever one we believe is the standard of operation. We do that to ourselves.
It's... Now, you guys, when Chris says we, that's kind of like the royal we. Right, Chris? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's everybody. We all do it. I do it,
well,
you do it, we all
I mean,
do it.
Society does it to us. I mean, before we turn around, we're 50 years old, and we don't know what the hell hit us.
Right.
And the problem is to get out of these patterns of the wrong questions asked, therefore the wrong answers coming back.
Exactly.
Out of, The problem is that if you, until you give your, this is where the beautiful thing of the gospel is, of forgiveness and purity and righteousness as the basis of who we actually are. Yeah. Until we're willing to give ourselves a break, and by the way, give the same people or the same break to the people in our lives that were involved in our genetic makeup, that were involved in our upbringings, that were involved in our adolescence and our teenage years and our young adulthood, and until we're willing
it's
to give...
It's hard to believe that all those people, I know this is going to be an impossible statement for people to swallow, those people did the best they could with what they had. If they had known better, they would have done better.
And listen, because here's, in the same way, you guys, you must extend that thought that you got to embrace yourself. You know you did your best. You know you tried your best at this point. If you don't extend that same perspective to the other people that have been in your lives, you are a hypocrite. And you don't...
Well, the basis of the hypocrite is self-loathing.
Exactly. So
the basis of our hypocrisy is this judgmental sense that we have, that we have not met our own standard, and therefore we're so busy condemning ourselves, we can't... I can't believe that you would be a friend of mine. I'm so horrible. So if you're so stupid as to be a friend of mine, you must be a moron.
And then people get to respond to that attitude.
And a lack of self-trust leads to our playing all kinds of mind games with other people, because then we end up saying, look, I'm smart enough to know that I'm stupid, and therefore you can't be trusting me. And if you trust me, then you're a moron.
Right.
So I'm smart enough to know that you're a moron for trusting me because I'm stupid.
Wow. It's amazing that anything works in our society, isn't it? It's amazing that anybody lets anybody into traffic, that anybody obeys traffic.
Well, they don't less and less anymore. You see people heading every... Like, they believe in some cosmic sense that they're entitled to be in front of everybody else. How dare you try to get in front of me? Don't you see me over here in this Park Avenue or this Volkswagen or this Maserati or this Rolls Canarly, whatever? It's like, whatever. Everybody's got a bad case of it.
A Rolls Canarly?
Yeah, it can roll down a hill, but Canarly get up and again. Oh, you fell for that so bad.
No,
oh,
no,
my
no,
God.
No, dude. That's called being a good straight man. That's what that is. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's the good news with Chris Harrington's Reality. All right, so we're venturing in. We're like ankle deep.
Right.
Are you ready to like
rewards.
Push me into rewards?
I got
and
you ready?
Cannonball me, baby.
Okay, cannonball me, baby. Here it goes. So instead of entitlement, where somebody owes you something, this is where you pay yourself, and this is where the whole idea of making sure that you are paying your own bills, taking responsibility, making sure that you set yourself up for success, making sure that you have a good vocabulary, that you know where you're going, that you've got a good plan, that you have a successful list in front of you, that you're capable of meeting your own deadlines by giving yourself enough time and energy and money and resources to be able to handle the job. And part of doing that is to make sure that you feed into yourself all the time. You got to pat yourself on the back. You got to be your own best friend. So you know some things that you could do that are going to make you feel a whole lot better if you'll do something. Now, a lot of things are really long distance. Like, say, for example, getting a public education, that's 13 straight years of being institutionalized. That's more and more difficult for kids to see.
Wait. Here, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard a former public school teacher saying that public education is like being institutionalized.
Oh, yeah, for
years.
Sure. By the time you've been to preschool and you were in, I was already a reformed kid by the time I was in preschool. When I was in, before kindergarten, all right, there was a preschool, and this kid was smoking a stick. It was a little a grapevine. Not that he had it lit, but he was pretending that he was smoking it. And he was breathing in, because grapevines have a hole in the middle. He's breathing into it. And I said, don't do that. Something bad's going to happen to you. And I was like 4 years old, right?
Wow.
And he says, no, it's not. And I said, yes, it is. Something bad's going to happen to you. He says, no, man. And I picked up a rock and I clobbered him in the head and I said, see, I told you something bad was going to happen to you. And they took me out and they put me in Mrs. Burke's play school.
I bet they did.
Yeah, man, they locked me up.
Dude, you knew that something bad was going to happen to him from ingesting through his stick.
From the moment I saw
that's,
it, I knew
that's
it
in the days
when
like the Flintstones were smoking on television and stuff.
Yeah.
How the hell did you pick up on that?
I knew that Barney and Fred should not be smoking. I knew they were doing those cigarette commercials. I knew they shouldn't have been doing that stuff.
The Flintstones did Territid commercials, and
yeah,
I know
they
that.
Yeah, Brontosaurus in their lungs.
And it smoking clearly stunted Barney Rubble's growth.
Absolutely.
But
and everything else, too.
But I remember that because my parents smoked Territins, and Territin tastes good like a cigarette should.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't it. Oh, no. Territin smokers would rather fight than switch.
Oh, yeah, fight than switch. So they have a circle around
their eyes. They have a little black eye under it. And Fred Flintstone would have the black eye in the cartoon. Dude, when societies look back on those things, they're going to say, what the hell were they thinking?
See, now my lesson right there was that punitive things didn't make it for me. You know, we have all kinds of punitive ways of dealing with people, and even the threat of hell, and people still, on a daily basis, they break, like, almost every law in the Bible. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so
the threat
of hell has never really done it.
No, we know through Paul's understanding that if you break one, you've broken them all.
Yeah, so even if you just think about it.
Mentioning
a word that's on the list is the same thing as breaking the list.
Having a thought of eating a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich.
You're done.
You're done. You're toast.
You're toast.
You're the toast on the BLT.
I always wondered why they didn't go down and stone all those people who were busy having shrimp and crab and catfish.
The catfish I could understand, the shrimp and the
lobster. It has to have scales and fins.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, crab, got no fins. So, boom, we got to take it out.
So you were not receptive to the punishment side of things.
No, it didn't work for me.
But
I tell you what works is a reward.
Me too, bro. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like
me
a reward.
Too. I love some acknowledgement. I love some love.
Positive things. In fact, this afternoon, I had the kitchen all set up, ready to go, and I said, I need to do all these dishes and clean this stuff and get these countertops all done, and I will do it for a yogurt with carob chips and almonds in it. So I got the yogurt out, and I got the almonds and the carob chips, and I put it out right there on the counter. And lickety-split, it was all done, and I was watching TV and eating my snack. Now, I don't know. I usually don't use food,
Sean, are you listening to this? His reward was yogurt, carob chips, and almonds.
Yep.
That was his reward for doing the dishes and cleaning the countertop.
Yep.
Sean, what would it take you to reward yourself for doing the dishes?
What would I do for a Klondike bar?
What would you do for a Klondike bar? What would you do for a Klondike bar?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember what a Klondike bar looks like.
Oh, they're delicious. it's the white ice cream covered
in
like
dry,
a...
He's dry on the rewards, huh?
You are a little dry on the rewards, aren't you?
A little dry, yeah.
Yeah, he is.
We're going to have to get him set up.
I don't think he'd argue.
So here's some ideas, okay?
Yes.
All right. So let's say that you wanted to get some things together to reward yourself, and I have a really cool idea that you can use at the end, so just kind of go with the flow for a second.
All right.
You know, if you are more effective with your time, you're going to have more money, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so then you'd have more money.
Yes.
You'd also have more time.
Yes.
You'd also have more leisure time that you could give yourself. Like, I'll give myself an extra hour off on Saturday night if I get finished by, let's say, noon on Saturday with my networking or whatever I'm supposed to be doing, right?
All right.
So you could have more joy. You could have better food. You could have new clothes, fresh friends, a vacation, a new car, a date. You could make hobby stuff. You could go get a new book or go get some new equipment for something that you're working on, like a tool. You could go on a trip to a museum. Human interest items. Now, not everybody falls into this angle, but I especially like going and sitting at airports or at bus stations or at train stations especially and looking at people. Like, I'll go to the mall, just sit down at the mall, or I'll go walk at the mall because I want to go see people do their thing.
Right. Have you ever gone to an airport without having to pick somebody up? Or
yes.
Or going somewhere yourself and you just plunk yourself
down? Yes, and train stations many times.
Train stations.
Subway stations many times.
Just without any place to go other than to...
yeah, I'm just walking down there to take a look.
Wow.
Could
that be one of my rewards that I take?
Could be.
I could go down to the Tampa
International. And the thing is, those are cheap rewards, but they're extremely rewarding because I get a kick out of it. I might have mentioned this before, but I had a mentor who was a printing teacher. He did Jacob's Pillow and the New York Underground for the World Trade Centers. His name is Jim McWilliams. Wonderful, wonderful graphic artist. And that guy, and we went to New York. He wanted to take me to Hoboken, and we were just gone for a couple of days to just go around New York City and just look at really cool stuff. He was really a good teacher. And so we were on the subway, and he says, "Look at that guy over there." Guy had a briefcase, and he was wearing a three-piece suit, had an umbrella and an overcoat over his arm. And a guy, and so Jim says, "What does this guy do for a living?" I have no idea. He said, "Well, just tell me what you think." And I said, "Jim, how can I know?" He made up this guy's entire life, his kids, the whole thing about the routine inside the briefcase. He had his gun because he was a secret, you know, this and that. The whole storyline was fabulous stuff. And so we spent the next 3 days making up stories about everybody under the sun, anybody that we saw, bag ladies, whatever. And we just had the best time. And from then on out, I was hooked on it. So everywhere I go, I just make up stories about everybody. Restaurants all the time. Drop of a hat.
That's hilarious, dude.
We'll see.
Now I know how a guy like you could come up with 9 poems in one day.
I'm telling you. Well, actually, I could do way more than that. But anyway, you know, is Steve Allen? Do you know who Steve Allen is?
Steve
Allen, genius,
please,
right?
Please explain to the beautiful humans who Steve Allen was. Or
Steve
is,
Allen
he is. He's
was
still alive,
a talk show host in the late 50s.
Right.
And
he preceded Johnny Carson and Jack Parr and Jay Leno, obviously, on The Tonight Show.
And one of the most beautiful pieces he did was with Jack Kerouac coming out and reading from On the Road. And Steve Allen was an ingenious piano player. He could make up stuff off the top of his head. And he got, I think they put him into like a Macy's or something, a store window for a day, and he said in 24 hours he could make up 300 songs, and sure enough he did 300 songs in one day. But the piano work that he does, you can find this online on YouTube, Jack Kerouac and Steve Allen, and Jack Kerouac is reading from his book On the Road. It's a brilliant piece, and the piano is just incredible. So let's see, calling a friend, using the internet, getting some new tools, making an art object, sitting and doing nothing, which to some people is like a real luxury.
Right.
Not having to do anything. For me, it would be like, well, that would be, if there was a hell, that would be it. Don't work. Don't do anything. Don't move a muscle. I'd be like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
See, that's kind of like heaven, sort of.
Yeah. Sleeping is the same way for me. If the sun is up, well, I'm up at like 3 or 4 o'clock every morning, but if the sun is up and I'm still in bed, it's because I'm dead. Let's see.
See,
food,
if I'm
working,
not talking, I'm dead. That's it.
Walking the dog, going on adventure. But here's one of the coolest things, okay? You make like 100 of these and you put them on scraps of paper and you put them in a jar and you say to yourself, whenever I have something that I have to do, I will allow myself, when I finish that something to do, to pick from this jar. A friend of mine made one of these for me when I was in my mid-20s. She knew that I had a really bad procrastination problem. I just didn't want to get the stuff done. I just wanted to just walk in the woods all the time and go skiing and have fun and just goof off, and I wouldn't study and all this kind of stuff. I was really having a hard time with it. So she made this little jar called a tapping jar. And the tapping jar was supposed to be a list of all the things that I would like to do when I get bored. And if I didn't have something that I had to do, I could go to the tapping jar and I could take one out and call her up, and she'd say, where are we going today? And we'd go. So we would go up to the mountain, or we would go down to the Connecticut River Valley, or we'd go out to South Hadley, or we'd go over to Northampton, or we'd go visit Emily Dickinson's home. This was in Amherst, Massachusetts. And it was a great time. I really enjoyed it. And it was such an ingenious and brilliant way to get me to actually do some stuff.
Was she hot?
Was she what?
Was she hot?
What?
Was she hot? Was she attractive?
Hey, this has something to do with this tapping jar, I'm sure.
It was kind of jovial in its nature, but
jovial.
I'm trying to, on a more serious note, gather how much motivation needs to be there for the reward.
Enough for you to say. It's important to me to get this done because this is something I would really like to do.
So this is a person that you'd want to be with, who's attractive on some level, not just.
But it didn't have anything to do with her necessarily, because there were things I could do on my own. Going to see a movie by myself, you know, going up Mount Sugarloaf and sitting there watching the sunset. You know, these were things that I could do on my own, or if I wanted to call her, she said she'd go once in a while, because she couldn't always go. But
all right, so these things were not necessarily things to do with her. They were things you could do by yourself.
Yeah, they were things. She knew me, and so she made up the list, and it was an awesome list because she really did know me very well.
All right, I get it.
Yeah, but it's good to make up your own. You know, I guess you could have a friend do one for you, but it's good to make up your own, and you say to yourself, wow, what would I like to do? What's on my go list of things that I would like to do, or things that would seem like fun? And then you can take them at random by pulling them out. And some people work for a specific reward, but some people like the whole challenge of something being, you know, spontaneous, and so you don't know which direction this is going to go, but you're going to get something like Cracker Jacks.
All right, so knowing me, what do I like?
I would say that you would have to work for a specific reward.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I would say, having heard you say that my reward would be better received spontaneously. Or relatively spontaneously.
What do you mean by relatively? That's like kind of pregnant. What do you mean by that? Relatively spontaneous.
Well, in other words, I would like to be working towards a goal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it shows up kind of unexpectedly. Because if you live long enough, you know, most of the goals that you try to shoot for, don't, you know, people like, you know, thank God for the prayers that God does not answer, type of thing. But most of them don't show up. But every so often they do, and you're like, hell yeah! And that thing, the hope for that, or the possibility, I guess, would be a better way of saying it, that there is a end result that could just spontaneously happen, is something that does motivate me. For me,
looking at it from that standpoint, okay, I think that you might, in the background, underneath it all, if I were to pull off all the layers of that, you might say, I'm doing something really cool right now that should earn me a reward.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think that your thinking of it that way sets you up for other disasters, so that whenever you're doing anything, anytime, that you think you need a reward. For example, if you help a little old lady across the street, maybe you expect a tip of $25.
Right.
Well, yeah, we're getting beyond the entitlement stage. You know, there are things that we do in the world that is, there are work. The things that we do, it's a complete giveaway. We're not looking for anything back from anybody. What we're doing is we're working out our own nature and understanding ourselves, and assisting other people and working out their nature and understanding themselves. That's our work in the world.
Right.
And we all have different metaphors for doing that, whether you're a nuclear physicist or whether or not you're a traffic cop or you're a guy who, you know, tests cars with dummies, and you do that in Consumer Reports. The reality is that we all do that at some level, and that's what we're supposed to do. It's a giveaway. But in order to motivate yourself to get through the daily grind of the things that you need to do to take care of yourself, I think that there's a self-interest involved in giving yourself something that rewards only you but doesn't distract or take away from someone else. And that way, you're taking responsibility for your own needs.
Can you say that again, please?
I think it's important that we take responsibility for our own needs.
So, in other words, when we do good things for people or extend a hand to a woman helping her across the street...
Yeah, it's a giveaway.
And we should not even expect a positive... Not even a positive emotional feeling.
No. Nothing.
How do you do that?
Yeah. You accept the reality of the situation that you're in. God loves you unconditionally. He didn't ask for anything in return. We're just paying it forward.
Paying it forward normally connotes that it'll come back to you at some point.
No, we're giving it away. We already got ours. We can afford to give it away because our Father owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. We have eternal life. We can afford to give it away now because we've got eternity to appreciate it.
The truth of the matter is that everybody has that. It's just that the people that do know that they do can afford to give it. They can afford to give that walk across the street without ever having even a positive emotion associated.
And don't even look back.
Wow. All right, buddy.
Love you.
You make my head spin, of course.
Good.
Hope your shoulder feels better soon.
Me too. I'm flying on this cold concrete. It feels great.
Get over here on 12-12-12 and before.
Want to.
All right, buddy. Love you.
Love you.
Love you, beautiful humans. Love Sean O'Halloran. Thank you, buddy. You guys, let us hear from you this week at glennklineonline.com. Recommend the show to your friends. Get on the Facebook. And until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!